Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 313 of the podcast. It's Friday, the 17th of March, 2017, as I record this, a little early as I'm flying to Chicago tomorrow. And by the time you get this on Monday, I will actually be in New Orleans. Well, I will still be on the train, on the Amtrak, traveling south. And then from Monday, we'll be in New Orleans, which I'm really excited about. And I know I'm going to pronounce it wrong and everything wrong, because apparently they pronounce things quite weirdly down there. So my high school French is not even any use. More on that in my personal update. But first, today I have a super detailed interview with Mark Dawson on using Amazon advertising for your books. And a few years ago, many of us tried the first time when Amazon ads came out, and then they turned it into KDP Select only. And then before Christmas, they actually made it open to everyone. So even if you're wide, you can use Amazon ads. And I've been starting to use them and have had some success and much happier with them than Facebook ads, for the reasons we'll go into in the interview. I get to ask all my personal questions about why it's so good and get some really useful tips. So you will definitely want the notes on this show. And remember that all the links and the notes are always on the show notes at thecreativepen.com/podcast. And this is episode 313. So you'll be able to get those there. Also, Mark mentions, forgets a couple of names, and I will mention those at the end. So don't worry about that. Also, very excitingly, Mark and I are doing a free webinar on how to set up your own Amazon ads, and it will include a demo. So yes, even though we will be talking about Mark's course, there will be a demo. So you will leave the webinar knowing exactly how to set up your own ads, and you don't need to buy anything. It's a free webinar. So that is on Tuesday, the 28th of March at 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK. And yes, you will be able to get the replay if you sign up. thecreativepen.com/Mark17, M-A-R-K-17, to sign up for that webinar. Okay, so in publishing news this week, well, I've been at the London Book Fair. So I wanted to share my impressions of the time I was there. So first of all, it's always a bit of a roller coaster. It's exciting because you feel part of such a vibrant industry, and you know, there's people running around and there's all these stalls and people and books. And I think the incredible array of book covers makes you feel a little bit dizzy, like, you know, as an introvert as well, sort of overly sensitized to input. And then also being a reader, you know, we are trained to look at book covers. That's what we do. And of course, the people at the book fair are some of the top sort of publishers in the industry. So they've covered their stalls with book covers that draw your eyes. So you literally walking around, just your eyes everywhere on all these book covers. And it's also very cool to see some of the tiny niches. I say niches and Americans say niches, right? But the tiny niches that people have and are making a living in. Like, I even saw the Dubai Police Academy have another form of income, but they had their own stall with their own books. And I just thought that was hilarious. You know, there are comic book companies, there are just all kinds of really interesting companies doing interesting things. So that's very cool. There's that cool side. There's also the sort of awesome camaraderie around the author HQ and meeting author friends and, you know, seeing the Amazon stalls with some of the top indies in the industry. And then, you know, so there's always the positive, happy stuff. And then there is the massive self-doubt and imposter syndrome that I always feel when I'm surrounded. You know, you're walking through and there's Hachette and Simon & Schuster, and it plays into all those, I don't know, because I'm 42, you know, having been brought up with a traditional publishing industry and a very traditional background, having been to Oxford and my mum was an English literature teacher. So I definitely get this sort of self-doubt and imposter syndrome that rises up as I'm surrounded by these big name authors and massive publishers. And then I walk back to the author HQ, which they always stick at the very back of the hall behind the children's section. but it was very cool. We had an Alliance of Independent Authors 5th birthday bash, which was fun. And I spoke on a panel. I'll talk about that again in a minute. But I mean, basically, it was really an awesome few days. I always really like to go to the book fair. I've been going since 2012 when the Alliance launched. I did find it emptier this year. And a publishing friend of mine who works for one of the big German publishing houses said that it is the result of Brexit. And the impact on UK publishing being outside of the EU is significant. And there were a few panels, industry panels, talking about that. So I think, you know, for us indies, for indie authors within the EU, and for Americans and other people around the world, we are very lucky that we don't publish within territories. So when we self-publish, we upload on Amazon and Kobo and Drafter Digital and iBooks and all the other sites, and we can just check like all countries. And if you have licensed some of your rights, you can tick the other countries you haven't published in. So we're not very aware of this territorial right situation. But what my German friend was saying is, you know, the European territory, the EU territory, the UK publishing companies will now be outside of that. And how that will work with licensing deals is quite interesting within the traditional industry. And also just the general, whether people will be able to work so effectively together, there will be different tax rates with print books within the territories. So I think we are going to see some difficult times ahead in terms of Brexit and the UK publishing industry, but that won't affect indies so much as traditionally published authors. So that was interesting. And it does potentially indicate that Frankfurt Book Fair will become even more important. London, you know, seems to have got smaller. That was definitely my feeling, having been for the last 5 years and walked around, and it seemed that there was a lot more space on the edges and a lot fewer stalls and a lot fewer people, to be honest. So yeah, quite weird. I was also struck by the separation of business models between indies and digital first publishers and the print first publishing industry. It was, again, the territory stuff is one example, but also the format thing. So the word on the street was, yay, print is back. And, you know, you've all seen the reports on how ebook sales are dropping and blah, blah, blah. I mean, we've heard this all before and it's like, yeah, whatever. I also even talked to one new service provider that is entirely focusing on the business model of providing print services to authors and not even considering a revenue model like a revenue, you know, share model like Drafter Digital or Smashwords and Amazon and Kobo and iBooks. So where they take a cut of a sale. So in my opinion, I much prefer services that are free to publish that take a cut of my sales because they are incentivized to sell my books and to encourage me to want to sell my books. Whereas if a business model of a company is you pay them for editorial and cover design and they don't get any money they don't get any money if you do sell books, then they don't have any investment in you actually selling books. So I was just really interested by the, again, refocusing on print, especially when I look at my own P&L and see, you know, 87% of my book sales income in 2016 was from digital, so from ebook sales, and also from a growing number of countries. And this is the silo effect of the print publishing industry, the fact that they are territorial, it's not just the EU. You know, I mentioned in my presentation that I've sold in 82 countries, and, you know, the fact that some of those are in sub-Saharan Africa, Asia, Latin America. These are territories that many of these traditional publishers are not even selling in. So I think if you focus on just the sales in your own country, like the UK, you're going to see ebook sales dropping, or you're going to see your share of ebook sales dropping. And if you're not focused on the global digital landscape, then you're missing out on so much opportunity. And I was talking to one person and I just walked away in the end. I just couldn't have the conversation. They could not get their head around a global market that even an individual like me can reach and that an individual like you can reach. And it struck me again how almost miraculous it is that we can reach so many readers through these free platforms. I mean, it's amazing. So everybody stop moaning about discoverability and all that. I mean, the fact is we are in the best time. We really are in such an amazing time to be an author. And it did just bring it home to me as I walked around the book fair. I just felt, and I looked at some of the companies and I realized that my bottom line, that my profit margin is a higher than many of these bigger companies. Like they might have more staff. They might have more product, but I make more profit because of my business model. And that's something for us to keep an eye on is don't, you know, we have to and we should emulate the publishing industry around quality. So quality of editorial, quality of design, but we shouldn't emulate the publishing industry around these territorial rights, these sort of really focusing on print only and that type of thing. So I was excited about that. What else? I also noticed the stratification of indie authors a lot more. So I met up with, when I spoke and a lot of people listened to the podcast, hello everyone I met at the book fair. what I noticed with the people I was meeting is there really is, there's always new people coming into indie. And some of you listening, you might be new listeners. And you might be new authors and you might be new at self-publishing. So your questions at this point in your journey are quite basic to many of us who have been doing it for sort of 8 years. And what I really noticed was that there are, you know, the mistakes that people make are exactly the same as the mistakes that I made at the beginning. Not focusing on editing, not getting cover design right, no focus on the business. Those are the mistakes we all make at the beginning. And then what was interesting is a number of the people I've grown up with in the industry, most of them now have a small publishing imprint. You know, obviously I have Curl Up Press now. Many of the people I talk to, anyone that had sort of 10 books and more was either looking into an imprint or setting up one or already publishing under one, which kind of begs the question, when does an indie author become an independent publisher? And I've got an interview coming up that I've already recorded. It's in the queue with Alison Jones about the Independent Publishers Guild and how independent publishers see indie authors and how, you know, some of the lessons we can learn from independent publishers. And I'm now a member of the organization and it was really interesting to kind of think of that crossover. And I actually talked a bit to Amazon about this while I was there, sort of mentioned, you know, the difference between the newbie self-publisher who's putting their first book up on KDP and really might not have a clue to the independent author who might have a small press imprint, but who's published 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 more books and is doing this as a business and making significant money. And, you know, they are noticing this stratification as well. So really interesting level that we're at in the market where things have definitely matured. And of course, there's this sort of funnel effect where the number of people who come in at the amateur end is huge and growing all the time. And then it's kind of whittled down as the number of books grow. And you get to decide the level of professionalism that you want to be at and whether you want to do this for a living or not. I also had some good meetings, talked to Ingram about ideas for selling more print and also with iBooks about how to, help more indies go wide. also had a great meeting with Published Drive, who I'm very impressed with, and I'm going to be publishing with Published Drive when I get back from America. They are an ebook distributor out of Hungary and very much focused on European and Asian markets. They do Google Play distribution, but they also have relationships in China. So I'm fascinated with that. And that's ebooks in English in China and India and that type of thing. So I'm very interested to see, because of course, most of the distributors so far have been American. And of course, there is Zinzi, which has been going a long time in Europe, but Published Drive seems to be the first sort of potential competitor to Smashwords and Drafted Digital that's not out of America and has some very interesting tools. They're investing in AI tools around discoverability and they are very focused on digital. They're also a pretty young team. So I really like that. I love the fact that there are younger people coming into into the market, into apps and into, and they're kind of, you know, they've even got a growth hacker on their team, like as in the lady's job title is growth hacker. And I was like, that's awesome. That is a sign of a millennial based business. So I definitely want to be part of that and these kind of newer models. So yeah, Publish Drive, I will report back on that once I get into that. Also PubMatch, I mentioned PubMatch like probably 3 years ago. It's a site that was set up to try and enhance the rights licensing business. So instead of meeting physically at book fairs and selling rights face to face, the idea was that you would load up your books and say what rights were available, and then essentially be able to license them through the site or by email. So basically like a rights marketplace. And it kind of has been fizzling away, but they have now got Wiley on board. So this to me is interesting. Wiley were there at the fair talking about how they're using PubMatch, and we will definitely be getting into that as well. So it will be interesting to see how that will work. I think it's definitely something that will be used, because it's just crazy that so much of the right stuff is done face to face. I mean, you know, like we're saying, you know, if I'm selling books in Namibia, for example, you know, or South Africa, you know, why should I have to meet the publishers in those countries in order to sort out deals? It's just kind of crazy. So have a look at PubMatch. They do, I think that it's still early days, but we shall see. Interesting times. Okay, I also met with Clays, who are a printing house here. They do a lot of the very beautiful print books in Britain, as in they are, you know, short run or full print run publishers. Well, they're not publishers, they are printers, basically. So I met with them to talk about the premium journal after going backwards and forwards around some of my requirements, you know, for example, the lie flat idea, the sewn, which it has to be sewn in order for it to lie flat, which attracts more cost. I wanted a really nice cover texture material to make it a premium product. So we've still got some more things to work out. For example, how will the journal attract VAT, which there's a difference between a book and a journal, and the colouring book thing is still going on. So the journal won't be a colouring book, but it fits in that kind of bucket of not complete. The book is not complete. The idea is you write in it. But I really liked the sample, so I'm kind of tipping back towards that. I had thought it might not be possible to do a product at the level I want to, which is also made in Britain, because that's definitely one of the things I want to do, is designed and made in Britain, so that you know, I don't want to go offshore and do all of that. I want to do it made in Britain. So anyway, I will update on that. But it was good to have all these different meetings. And if you're going to book fairs, always best to set up meetings at least a month in advance, because people are very busy. Okay, I also did a session alongside Adam Croft and Orna Ross, and also a guy called Gabriel Mercer, who was talking about email lists. And I did a rapid fire 11 ways to reach more readers and sell more books. And the recording of that will be going out as part of the Indie Author Fringe. So by the time you get this on Monday, it will be out on the Alliance of Independent Authors blog, which is at selfpublishingadvice.org. If you go to selfpublishingadvice.org and scroll through the blog, you're going to find that, or click on the Fringe link and you'll find a whole load of sessions that have been posted over the weekend. Lots of things on the writing process, book descriptions, setting up your website, how to use Kobo, Drafter Digital, audiobooks, also how to dominate your nonfiction niche with Joseph Alexander, who's making seven figures with books on playing guitar. I waved at Joseph, but didn't actually meet him personally at the fair. Also how to work with editors and illustrators, and all this for free. So check out the selfpublishingadvice.org and check out the Indie Author Fringe and my session on reaching more readers and selling more books. So that was the book fair, and I've now caught up with my sleep. It's amazing how tiring it is. Again, I think partly it's just the introvert thing and meeting all the people and the amount of stimulation there is. And really great, though. I definitely don't like missing the book fair. In fact, I haven't missed one, as I said. So I might even be going to Frankfurt this year, which is about six times the size of London Book Fair. So it's kind of crazy. But I've basically done no writing this week. It's just been London Book Fair. And now I'm preparing for the New Orleans trip. I'm pretty excited about it, actually. As I've mentioned before, we are co-writing a book between four of us from scratch, although it will be within Jay Thorne's American Demon Hunters world. So there will be some rules, basically in each of his books, which are co-written with lots of different authors. There's a whole load of American Demon Hunter novellas out there. I think we'll be writing a full-length book though, because there's four of us. Be a bit lazy to write a novella. But basically a portal opens somewhere in America and demons do bad stuff and people try and stop them. So my kind of fun. I like a good book about demons. So yeah, that it will be really amusing to do that together. I think, well, it will either be really amusing or we'll kill each other. Well, which will bring a different flavour to the book. But basically, it is me, Jay Thorne, who's a dark fantasy and horror writer, and he and I co-wrote Risen Gods with. Jay also hosts the Intronaut podcast and also The Petal to the Metal with Rachel Herron, which is about leaving the day job to go full-time as a writer. So definitely check out that podcast. Zach Bohannon, who writes post-apocalyptic dystopian and horror and suspense books. Zach likes zombies, so that'll be fun. And Lindsay Barocca, who's been on the show a number of times, a very, very top indie fantasy author, incredibly prolific. And I'm slightly concerned about doing things with Lindsay because she seems to be able to write like a fantasy book in a week. So maybe the book will be, you know, I'll just have a couple of detailed chapters here and there. But no, and you can hear my self-doubt coming out now. This is what's funny. I actually am having some sort of major self-doubt worries about co-writing with these three authors next week. I mean, this is probably one of the most ambitious things I've tried to do creatively. I think it will be awesome though. Lindsay also co-hosts the Sci-Fi and Fantasy Marketing podcast, which is a great show, very laid back and also full of great tips. Even if you don't write science fiction or fantasy, it's worth listening to for marketing tips. So also we'll be recording various things while we're there. We will, the four of us, be on the Sci-Fi and Fantasy Marketing podcast next week because they put out their show, you know, quickly. So I think on like the 22nd of March or something, we'll be on that podcast. I will be recording stuff and put it out when the book is launched. I think we're also going to do something with Jay. So it's all going to be super fun. You can also follow along with my pictures. So Twitter @thecreativepen with a double N, or my fiction Facebook page, which is facebook.com/JFPenAuthor. And also Instagram. I'm JFPenAuthor on Instagram. So I'll be putting pictures up there. I also am going to be doing some touristy things in New Orleans, clearly all the voodoo and graveyard stuff, thanks to everyone who's emailed me with tips. I'm meeting up with a couple of other authors while I'm there. I also have an arcane book planned for the city, the first in a spin-off series with Jake Timber and my United States arcane agent, Naomi Lacasso, who first got together, well, not got together, they featured in One Day in New York. So I'm looking forward to doing that. And in fact, I'm just generally looking forward to this trip, filling the creative well and going to a city I have always wanted to go to. So very excited. And next week, I'll be able to tell you more about it because I will record it in New Orleans. Okay, so thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments this week. Kitty says, I'm sending you a rainbow after a recent rainstorm over Werza Bay in Wellington. Fantastic. Thank you, Kitty. Lovely picture. Francisca in Chile says, I just started to listen to your podcast. It's awesome. The information is so useful. That's so great to hear people from around the world listening to the show. And as ever, I always love to hear where you're from. So, you can always tweet me @thecreativepen with pictures or send them through by email. Tara Kelly, author, says, catching up on the podcast while enjoying a walk with my dog O'Day. Cute picture. Icy Cedric says, just listen to the show with Chris Brogan. Inspirational and butt kicking. Diana L. Gunn says, so pleased the podcast this week talks about improv. I love improv and it's influenced my writing so much. Thanks, Diana. And I definitely like to lean into that improv idea of saying yes. Just say yes to the muse and it will really help your writing. Marielle S. Smith, paying my respects during my walk. So sent me a picture from a graveyard while listening to the show. And yay for Kobo going Dutch. Comment there on Kobo Plus launching in the Netherlands, a subscription service. And finally, S.A. Stevenson, Sally, I think that is, voted for my show, the Creative Pen Podcast, and Dad Wrote a Porno in the British Podcast Awards. And this made me laugh because a number of people have recommended the podcast My Dad Wrote a Porno. I haven't actually listened to it, but apparently it's a guy whose dad actually is writing erotica and they're kind of reading it out and talking about it. And it's apparently quite funny. Now, I think my show is a completely different type of show, but I am very happy to be nominated in the British Podcast Awards. That is definitely something I would quite like to win. So we'll see about that. Okay, so today's show is sponsored by everyone supporting the show on Patreon. A huge thank you to everyone. And now Patreon has their own RSS feed. You can get the Q&A show through your podcatcher. So however you listen, you should be able to get it on your RSS feed. And I put that out last week or the week before. The time just runs into each other, doesn't it? But yes, thank you to everyone who's been supporting the show for so long. And also thanks to new patrons, Alison Mott, Marielle S. Smith and Brendan Miggins. And also to those people who prefer to stay anonymous. And of course, if you do support the show, you can request that I don't read your name out. And I will happily not read your name out, but thank you anyway. So I really do appreciate the Patreon support, like your tweets and emails. It really demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And okay, so you can support the show with just a few dollars, under a coffee a month, or two coffees a month if you're feeling really generous, and you'll get that extra monthly Q&A audio. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, let's get on with the interview. Today, I'm here again with Mark Dawson. Hi, Mark.
Hello, Jo. How are you?
I'm good. It's great to have you back on the show. Just a little introduction. Mark is the USA Today bestselling author of the John Milton thriller series, as well as a number of other novels. He co-hosts the self-publishing Formula podcast and is well known in the author community for his Facebook Ads for Authors course, which is now a broader course on advertising for authors. So exciting stuff, Mark. And I wanted to just like get straight into it. So you were on the show last year, as we speak, June 2016, so not even a year ago, but things have changed a lot. So why this shift, this broader approach to advertising for authors instead of just Facebook?
Well, we started, the course came together, I think the first time towards the end of 2015. So this is only the fourth time that we've opened the course up. And every time that we've released it to new students, we've added something new in. So the last time we added things like Twitter advertising, YouTube advertising, copywriting for author ads and all of that kind of stuff. And this time we're adding in Amazon ads, which is something that we're going to be talking about today. But the more we added in, the more obvious it was that it wasn't Facebook ads for authors. It was really advertising for authors and just general principles on how we can make our books more visible, how we can build our mailing lists and sell and build our careers. So we felt that a rebranding was in order.
Yeah. And I guess it's a broader question about advertising as part of an author's strategy is not just one thing, is it? You really need a kind of broader approach to marketing these days.
Yeah, I mean, we have to treat ourselves as business people, and you know, a business needs a multi-pronged approach to selling stuff. So advertising, promotion, marketing, these are all tools that we need to have in our arsenal. And not everyone, it's not for everyone. So, I mean, obviously there are some authors who are just much more happy sitting down and writing stories, which is absolutely fine. But I'd say generally, the general principle these days is that you need to be able to do a little bit more than just that if you want to increase your odds of selling books.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you know, I'm someone that you've encouraged to do much more paid advertising. And I'm always like, oh, I should have got into this earlier. So if people listening are feeling like it's too late, like it's never too late to get started. But let's, we're going to focus on Amazon ads because they're like the up and coming thing right now. But I want to just talk about Facebook advertising first. So at this point with, you know, what you know, your massive knowledge about Facebook advertising at this point and all the testing that you do on everyone else's behalf, because I certainly don't have the patience for it. So what is Facebook advertising good for, like at this point?
It's still good for everything. So there are two main purposes that I recommend authors use Facebook ads for. The first one is building your mailing list, and the second one is selling books directly. And it's still probably, in fact, it is still without any question, is the best platform for doing both of those things. There are challenges that are coming up all the time, Amazon being the newest one. But Facebook is still the most efficient, the most targeted and focused platform available. So, I mean, I'm spending, at the moment, I just checked before I came on, I'm still spending $600 a day on ads across various different parts of the business. So there's the course side of the business, which is getting quite a lot of spend at the moment. Mm. But at the same time, I'm still running about $100 a day on list building, and also a good chunk on sales as well. So it is, you know, it is still the place to be. The thing I would say though is that when I started doing this with Facebook, so 2014, something like that, that was probably the golden age. No one was doing it. No authors were doing it that I was aware of, certainly not to the extent that I quickly got into doing. And the days of making 400 or 500% returns on investment are probably gone for most people because there's just more competition now. Partly my fault, I'm afraid. So sorry about that, because that's what other people had to do it. But it's still possible. I checked my ads last night. I'm still getting 100% return on some ads. So in other words, spend $1, get $2 back. It's really great for advertising on Australia right now. So I'm doing a lot of ads to Australians. And I mean, you'll know about this, having just come back from Australia, but the books are very expensive over there. Mm. And if you can undercut traditional publishers and do that broadcast with ads, which Facebook makes very easy, you can do really, really well. So some of my series are ranking quite highly in Australia. Canada is great. Kobo is a really good platform to be directing traffic to. So that's working. Mm. And one other thing, I knew you were going to ask this question. So I had a quick look through our closed Facebook group because I wanted to get an example of someone that we've taught how to do this. And just have a look at how she's done over the course of the last year. So there's an author called Octavia Randolph, who I don't know if you've heard of before, but she writes in a super small niche. So she's writing, she describes it as 9th century English and Scandinavian historical fiction.
Awesome. So
it's a niche of a niche. And she says, she posted a quick kind of recap after a year's worth of doing this. And she said in 2015, her writing income without Facebook advertising was $33,000. Her 2016 writing income with Facebook advertising was $159,000. And her list went from 720 members to 31,000 members. So there is no question that it is still the most effective way to advertise for authors. But the good news is there are others that are coming up that we can also look to advertise on as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. And actually, one of the most exciting things about being an indie is I haven't heard of Octavia, and most of the world has not and may never hear of her, but she is making a good income. Same with me. And, you know, you're much more famous these days, but still, it doesn't matter. Lee Child always says, you know, most of the planet hasn't heard of Lee Child. And obviously, he's not an indie. But what I love about this world we're living in now is, you know, you can make a really good income as a creative using tools like this. Yeah. And who cares if anyone's heard of us?
I was on, you may not have heard this because I think you're out of the country, but I was on Radio 4's Front Row not too long ago. And the first question for me, I was with Neil Gaiman, which was great. So he's obviously amazing.
Who is just superstar.
Yeah, and lovely as well. And the first question from the presenter was, so forgive me, I don't know who you are. And so I was kind of, I answered it quite politely, but I was tempted not to be quite so polite. But you're right, it doesn't actually matter. It doesn't matter that 95% of the UK population has no idea who I am. And yeah, I'm making a good living from telling stories. So it's a good sign, because it just means there's millions of people that we can sell our books to as time goes by.
Mm. I mean, you mentioned Kobo there. Obviously, most people just default to Amazon. But, you know, I've been looking through my iBooks revenue. And I mean, It just keeps coming in without even doing much. But I've tried some Facebook ads with iBooks and just haven't really had success. Have you had success with iBooks advertising specifically?
A bit, not as much as the other platforms. I find their affiliate tracking is a bit temperamental.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible.
I don't like it. The interface is confusing as well, so I'm not a big fan of that. But I have had some success. I mean, Kobo is great. The reason Kobo works so well is because, and this is, I'm going to give you credit for this again, because you persuaded me to put my books together in like a mega bundle. So instead of a 3-book bundle, it's an 8-book bundle, and I can charge that at $25, which makes a royalty for me of about $18, something or other. And by you know, I'm not going to sell quite as many of those because it's more expensive, but I'll sell enough to make certainly 150% return most days. And that's meant that the book is ranking quite highly. And it's a pleasure to look at my my Kobo report now, because every time I get another sale, it's another $20. And they just keep coming in. So that's that was a great piece of advice. So I'll probably
there we go. Thank you so much. But you know, and just on for people listening, I mean, my fiction income in general, I just looked at it, is over 50% box sets. I mean, because the box sets make such a higher revenue, it's kind of crazy. So certainly with fiction, I now think in three books. There has to be three books, and then you can do a box set. Otherwise you're kind of missing out. So, and I think we're still ahead of traditional publishing on things like box sets, because they're not really doing them so much. Like if I had some of those catalogs, I'd be bundling a whole load of authors together as traditional publisher, but they're just not doing that, are they? I mean,
no, I did some consulting for my agency, who set up a kind of digital imprint called Ipso Books. And they've got people like Marjorie Allingham, kind of famous authors from days gone by. And one of the first things that we did was we had a lot of content. It was to bundle it. It was to put it into box set bundles. And I think that's where they're making most of their sales from. Oh, so, you know, if you've got
the
inventory.
Stop telling them, Mark. Stop telling them these things.
Hey, there's loads of readers to go around.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, so that's pretty cool to catch up on what's happening with Facebook. And I think, you know, and it definitely still works for fiction and nonfiction. So everything we're talking about is fiction and nonfiction. But let's get into Amazon ads. So why are Amazon ads like the thing right now? I mean, obviously, before Christmas, they existed, but they were only for KDP Select authors. And they were a bit crap a few years ago, right? I mean, I tried them when they first came out and they were just bad. So why are they now suddenly a good idea?
I tried them right at the start as well. I don't have many books in Select, but I did try them with some books that I did have, and I couldn't get them to spend any money, which is the problem, which we'll get to. It is still the problem, is actually getting Amazon to spend money for the ads. But they open it up to everyone, Select or non-Select, maybe October or November last year. And I got into it quite quickly. And I'm fortunate enough to have a reasonably large budget to be investing in testing and trying to get these things to work. So I started running ads, and something has changed since the previous, as you say, the crap version of Amazon ads. And I agree with that. And what we've got now, I was getting sales, I was getting clicks, and they were starting to be quite profitable. And the issue was getting them to spend the full budget. I was getting, you know, the ACoS score. So I think that's the total sales divided by the cost of advertising. And if you're, you know, as long as it's not above 70%, when you take your royalty into account, that generally means you're going to be in profit. And I was starting to see scores of 5%, 10%. So maybe spending 20 cents and getting a sale, which is very, very profitable. So something had definitely changed. And the reason they're hot is because if you compare them with Facebook, the purpose of Facebook, if you're a user on Facebook, you're not in a buying frame of mind when you're on that platform. You probably want to see pictures of your family, cats doing stupid things, all of those kinds of things. That's what you go to Facebook for, you know, maybe news, all that kind of stuff. The difference with Amazon is an e-commerce platform. So you're on Amazon not to look at videos of cats, but you're on there to buy something. You're much closer to the buying decision than you are on other platforms. That's also true on Google as well. So Amazon is perfect for that. And if you can start to serve ads to people who are looking for the kinds of things that you're selling, you should find that the conversion percentage is much higher than it would be on those other platforms. And I did start to see that. And you know, we can talk about my results as we go on, but I'm finding they're quite effective at the moment. And it's definitely the area that I'm most interested in right now.
So there are two You know, and I'm just going to be totally selfish, as I often am on this podcast, and ask my questions that I want to know. Because there's two types of ads. So the sponsored products and the product display ads. And it can be quite confusing because it doesn't really make it clear, like, what is the best one to use. So what is the difference between the sponsored products and the product display ads? And what is each one better for?
Okay, so sponsored products, I do most of those, so I'll talk about that first. They enable you to bid on keywords. So if you are, let's say, you're comparing your books, you write books that are quite like Dan Brown, so you might want to bid on the phrase, the key phrase, Dan Brown. And what you're aiming to do is whenever I go onto Amazon and try searching for Dan Brown, I'm presented with an ad for your Arcane series. And I might go, I'm fed up with Dan Brown. I'm going to try this new series and try that one instead. So that's what you're doing with those ads. So the search results appear, the ads appear within the search results and also on certain product pages. Mm. The product display ads, instead of bidding on keywords, you're bidding on placement on product pages. So instead of typing in Dan Brown, you might type in the lost symbol, and that's what you're aiming to get your ad on. You want it to be on that particular product page, just below, if you think about the Amazon pages, just below and to the right of the actual buy button. So that's where you want to get. And also, product display ads can get you on Kindle lock screens, which are quite an effective way to generate interest for people who are just looking at their Kindles.
Okay. So I've heard that, when I first started doing it, I tried, and I can never remember which one's which. So the one where they have auto-targeting, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's sponsored products. So you go in and choose auto-targeting, and like, it was just crazy expensive and just didn't seem to work. It had loads of impressions, but like no clicks. So what's the difference between auto-targeting or picking your own keywords?
So if you go to run a sponsored a keyword ad, you can say, look, this is the book I want to advertise. Amazon will then analyze that and try and pick out keywords that it thinks are relevant to your book. And I have seen campaigns like that. I've tested lots of them, and others I've spoken to have seen those campaigns work quite well. Unfortunately, the problem with this is there's not often any rhyme or reason as to which ones work and which ones don't work. We try and divine what that is, but it's not always obvious to do that. The problem with that is those keywords tend to be really broad. And I suspect they're being offered to lots of people who are writing those kinds of books. So if we're doing books that are quite like Dan Brown, for example, you'll be getting keywords like that. Your competitors will also be getting those keywords, which probably means that it's going to be more competitive in order to win those auctions. So I don't use those so much anymore. I tend to do research and to build up a specific list of keywords that are effective for the exactly kind of books that I'm trying to write. So I tend to go slightly more niche rather than that broad brush approach.
And therein lies the problem, as it does for Facebook and for many of these things, is keywords. I mean, many people have done a small amount of keyword research, but when they publish, but can you talk us through kind of the process of keyword research for Amazon ads and how many you need rather than just seven?
All right. So apologies. I'm a bit of a geek about this kind of stuff. So, and I actually quite enjoy doing this research, which probably makes me really, really weird, but there are lots of ways to do it. Some are easy. Some are more difficult. Some are free and some you have to pay for. So the simplest way to do it is if you're trying to find keywords, and let's start with the easiest ones, so other authors. So for me, Lee Child, David Baldacci, James Patterson, the best place to start is to go to Amazon author page and to have a look on that left-hand side beneath your bio where it says customers also bought these authors. So you can start to, I think it presents you with 10 to start with. So you copy those down, put them onto a spreadsheet, and then drill down into each of those. So go to Lee Child's page and find out that maybe he has Mark Greene or he has Tom Clancy. And then you can go further down the rabbit hole and click on those ones. And you can build up a list of authors quite quickly by doing that. So that's one way of doing it. Another way, which is a more visual way of doing it, is to use a free tool called yasiv.com. So yasiv.com. And if you type in your, say, one of your books, it will, in a visual capacity, present you with links other covers that go to your book, and then books that go to those books, and you can get a really easy visual sense of what those author boards look like. So that's a good place to start, and that's free too. But then to get into the slightly more complicated ways of doing things, you can start to apply keyword research. This is not new stuff in the internet marketing space. People have been doing Google PPC campaigns for 20 years now. So there's lots of tools available to try and use those for our purposes too. So if you go to Google and you set yourself up with an AdWords account, you don't need to spend anything. You just need to register for an account. You can then get access to the Google AdWords Planner. So you can then type in, so Lee Child, and you can ask Google to tell you a list of other things that people also search for if they're searching for Lee Child. And it'll present you with all kinds of different things. It may be misspellings of his name. So this behavior is being replicated on Amazon. So it gets you this list of keywords. It could be the books. You could then start searching on Jack Reacher. All of this kind of stuff will start to generate more and more keywords that you can put into your campaigns. There are slightly more sophisticated and paid tools that you can start to do research on Amazon itself. So keywords that are being used on Amazon. So there's, I'm trying to think of one now. I might have to tell you afterwards the names, and then we can pop some in the show notes. But there are some paid tools, maybe 10 or 15 bucks a month, where you can actually do research on Amazon itself. Mm. By combining all of those things, another good one, Goodreads is great. So if you go to Goodreads, there's a site called Listopia that I think Goodreads probably acquired from somebody else. And there are loads and loads of lists there. So you can find lists like the 100 best thrillers that you need to read before you die. And there's a really good place to just get lists of thrillers that are probably quite like your books. And there are some tools that you can subscribe to. Again, I can't remember the name of the tool now, but it basically will scrape the data off the page. So you don't need to copy it down or cut and paste it. It does it all automatically. So it's very easy. By combining all of those methods, you can get up to 1,000 keywords in each campaign. And I typically will get up to about 1,000 keywords for several campaigns, and just then fire them out and start to see which ones work, which ones don't work.
You obviously have had success in targeting Lee Child and Jack Reacher. I mean, many indies, certainly in smaller niches or in general, have found that targeting other indies might be a better thing. Mm. And I mean, you can't really do that on Facebook because most indies don't have a big enough presence to be a Facebook target. But is, because of the price differential, so say like my perma-free Stone of Fire, is there any point in trying to get that up on Dan Brown's audience because it's free, whereas they're used to paying like $15 for the one Dan Brown book that comes out every 5 years, sorry. So what are your thoughts on targeting indie versus traditional authors?
There's two questions there. So indie authors absolutely is a great idea. I do that all the time. And you're quite likely to get people who are prepared to take a chance on an indie writer. So if someone has say read Russell Blake or Barry Eisler, two other indies that I my books are quite like, I'm confident that the readers will be open-minded enough to not bother that I'm not Hachette. I'm Salisbury Office. So that's a good idea. Now the perma-free question, that's a different one. So I don't really think that's a great idea. And the reason, well, it depends how big your budget is and what your objective is. Mm. If you just want brand awareness and impressions, it's a good idea because these ads, the thing we haven't mentioned yet, you only charge for the click. Mm. So that's, you're hoping, of course, those clicks translate into sales. But most advertisers would take your arm off if you said, like, I worked it out before I came on the call with you. I've had 15 million impressions on Amazon. So in other words, my ads have been served 15 million times on the biggest e-commerce retailer on the planet. And I haven't been charged anywhere near what you'd expect to get if you're in a traditional business and you wanted just to splash your brand across product pages. So that's a real benefit in itself. But for you, for that free book, you'll find it very difficult to track conversions because it only really picks up sales, and it won't tell you how many times it's been downloaded because you're not going to get any money from that. It's a freebie. You could take a benchmark and see what read-through is like into the second and third book. That might give you an idea. It's worth testing. I mean, that's the thing with this kind of stuff. It's original ideas always worth testing, and some you may land on something that no one else is doing, and it's a brilliant idea, and you suddenly you can buy a house in Malibu and put your feet up and relax. So yeah, definitely give it a try.
And you mentioned there are thousands of keywords. Is that like, let's take the number 1,000. So I can see with what you're saying how you can get to 1,000 keywords. I've probably managed to get to about 200, but I haven't gone that far. So do you put all of those on one campaign, or do you duplicate the ad and put like 100 on each? And then, you know, what happens if any of those work or don't work?
I've got probably about 190 different campaigns. So, and some of those will have 1,000 keywords, others will have 50 keywords. And I'm trying different things with all of them. So maybe those 50 keyword campaigns, those keywords will be really laser targeted. So there'll be no junk. It would all be really, really focused. Other campaigns, so maybe I've got that 1,000 keyword campaign. There's one of them where I don't know how it happened, but the word God went in as a keyword. So through that research process, I'm not filtering much at that stage. I'm not looking particularly for relevance. The word God was included. And when I analyzed how that campaign was reacting to the audience, I think five people who'd searched for the word God had actually bought my book. Now, I don't know.
Well, you have a book called Sword of God, right?
That's very true. There you go. You fixed it. Yeah.
So I would think that's obvious.
Well, that's, yeah, you're probably right. You know, I hadn't thought of that. That was exactly it. Yep.
Yay,
ignore I just said that. You've solved that conundrum.
Well, no, but what we've just done there is, you know, use the keywords that are within your book. And I mean, as someone obviously who reads a lot of religious thrillers, your book, Sword of God, is the one that I was most interested in as a target market that is quite tangential to your more mainstream thriller. But that's, you know, the kind of title that I gravitate to as a reader. So I can see how that happened.
Although thinking about that a bit more, if people are typing into Amazon God, and that's the word they're typing into their search bar. So it's possible that they're just thinking that Dawson guy's got a book called The Sword of, you know, or that God is in the title. But then again, the ad is being served. They're getting a box set. So they're not getting the Sword of God. They're getting a box set, which doesn't even include the Sword of God. I think you're probably right. I think that is probably what's happening, but I'm not quite sure
why it's all coming together. That's so interesting to me because this is another question, you know, I'm going to be all tangential, but do you then, if that happens, like, because Amazon suggests an amount that you put in, so it suggests like 25 cents per click, right? Have you changed that? Do you put it up? Like, I would, like, God, I would think is that should be totally targeted by a load of Christian writers. Yep. I mean, why are you getting that keyword for like 25 cents? Or so anyway, when we find one, do you put up the price per click, the bid?
I test at different levels. So when I'm running the campaigns, I tend to bid up to about 40 to 50 cents per click rather than the default 25 cents. Other times I've set bids as high as $3 per click, just because I wanted to test how the effect that would have on the actual budget being spent was. So I did a test on Patricia Cornwell and lots of keywords connected to her, and I bid $3 per click, and that did spend. Actually, those ads were profitable, so that you don't actually spend up to $3. It just says you could. That would be what you might spend. And I was getting more serves at that level with that going in. But, you know, when I start to analyze the campaigns and you can see which keywords, which are performing, which ones aren't performing, I don't tend to tweak the spend per keyword in that campaign. I'll probably take those successful keywords out and put them into a new campaign and then start to build another list. And I might start playing with the cost I'm prepared to pay for the click at that stage. And then maybe I'll copy that again and do another test to, you know, maybe go a bit lower this time to see if I can still generate the same kind of interest.
Okay. No, that's very cool. All right. So, okay, so just refresh us again in terms of how do we know if an ad is working?
Okay, so the best way is, are you making money? That's always going to be the case for Facebook, for Amazon, for all advertising. Are you reaching your objective within the parameters that you consider to be acceptable? So Amazon does make it pretty easy to do that because it has this metric it calls the ACOS score. So that's the average cost of sale. And to calculate that, as I said, you divide the total cost of advertising by the sales generated. Now, you need to tweak it a little bit because as indie authors, we're not getting 100% of the sale. We're getting 70% if we're in that bracket, or 35% if we're below. So provided that your ACOS score is around about 70%, you're probably, if it's below 70%, you're definitely in profit. If it's between 70 and say 85, 90%, you're probably in profit because ACoS doesn't take into account Kindle limited page reads. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take into account read through and things like that. So if you assume a little bit of added benefit, you can probably be a little bit more flexible than the 70%. But the problem with Amazon's metrics right now, it's messy. The interface isn't great. I've complained to them about this before, and they know it's a work in progress. They're constantly iterating it. But the ACoS score is a pretty good way just to focus quite quickly on which ones are working and which ones aren't working.
Mm. And are you using your print books and your audio, or just your ebooks?
I advertise the ebooks, but I know I'm getting sales on print, and I'm probably getting sales on audio. It's a bit more difficult for me to work out audio because I sell through Audible Studios. Okay. Yeah. So it's harder for me to track that, but I'm definitely getting print sales. My print has probably doubled since I started to do this, and it's typically the box set that's going up. So that's making me maybe $5 a time when I price it, I think $15 in the States, and those are selling reasonably well now. So I'm definitely seeing a positive effect over on that side of the business.
Have you done a print box set, have you?
Yes, I have, yeah.
I'm putting that on my list.
Yeah, that's a good idea. You need to, provided that you can get it within the CreateSpace
pages.
You start to get to 700 to 800 pages, you're starting to get into quite small type. Margins are getting squeezed a little bit, but it is possible to put out a decent quality product at that kind of doorstop level.
How interesting. And because I find that box sets are a different audience for ebooks. Like, so I presume the same as for print, right? It's not cannibalizing sales of your individual books. It's just a different market.
Yeah, exactly.
Ah, okay. There you go, everyone. And I think this is so important, you know. Every time you and I speak, we learn something. And every time, you know, no one's ever stopping learning in this business, right? And by the time I speak to you in another, well, I'll see you before 6 months, but, you know, things will have changed by the next time you launch the course. And, you know, these things are always changing. And if authors, like, I guess what I really learned is if you don't try it, well, you just might as well get going because things change all the time. And this is actually why this is so attractive, is it's such low risk. Like, you can end up spending like less than a dollar, really, can't you, to just get a whole load of data. Okay, so then I wanted to ask, what did I want to ask? Oh, yeah. So another reason I really like this as an ad platform is because one of the biggest issues with Facebook is, one, targeting, because you can't target indie authors, and two, the image. You have to come up with some smart image. Whereas this Facebook ad, you can use the cover, the book cover. So if you've spent some time and some money on a book cover, that is your ad. But what about the text? Because I've tried a couple of things now and it's difficult. You only get like a two lines, basically, don't you? So how are you distilling, and what are your best sort of recommendations for the for the ad text?
Well, it's copywriting 101. So it is, you've got no space for superfluous characters or even punctuation. You've got a certain amount that you can't go above that. You've got to be very, very efficient. So I'd say, kind of general perspectives, think about it not from your perspective, but from your potential reader's perspective. Got to make your copy hooky. So, you know, Adam Croft had that great hook for Her Last Tomorrow, which we always talk about.
Yes.
And he is a bastard. And
but well done, but we can't replicate Adam anymore.
No, we can't. So, no, but he's a really good example of a really, really excellent hook. And you don't need too much more than that. Something like that. His hook was, for those who don't remember it, would you murder your wife to save your daughter or something like that. So that's really good. So, and that goes into my second point, is to just ask intriguing questions. I find asking questions where you nudge people towards, you want them to keep saying yes. And so the last question is, would you like to buy it? If you may not say that, but that is your unsaid last question. And if they said yes enough times, maybe they'll say yes when they hover their mouse over the buy now button. I'd say don't follow the herd. So try and write something original. So, you know, don't say, would you murder your husband to save your son? That's probably not a very good idea. Yeah. Certainly don't copy the blurb. So,
Well, you can't, can you? Because it's only two lines.
It's difficult, but I mean, I'd go away from that completely, because people, if the hook is compelling enough, they'll see the blur when they click on the ad to go to the product page.
Okay.
And then address the browser. So using words like you is a really good idea. Would you like, are you interested in addressing it in that kind of conversational tone has worked very well for me in Facebook ads. And this is looking like it's working quite well with Amazon ads as well, which makes me think it's a fairly central basic tenet of effective copywriting is to talk about relationship between the advertiser and the potential customer.
Mm. And in the course, again, selfish question, are you going to include, ads that have worked versus ads that haven't worked? I mean, obviously, again, I saw what happened last time. Everyone copied your ads, yep. Right? Which, but, you know.
No, it's fine. I said they're good, so it's no problem.
Yeah. So, and you'll be sharing those because I think it helps people to see that type of thing. And I guess the other question there is, okay, so I've got, let's say, Ark of Blood, which is quite a good one for me because it's about the Ark of the Covenant. So there's quite a few keywords around Ark of the Covenant that are away from author names that I've been trying, and that works, you know, quite well. But should I have, let's say I have the same 20 authors that I'm using, should I just replicate the ad and change the text, in which case I'm bidding against myself, and see which one works? Or do I have to run one for a week and then run another one for a week?
Well, if you're bidding, say you've got Dan Brown and I'm trying to think of
James
another.
James Rollins.
Yeah. There's another one. So let's say you've got two ads and the first one is keywords around Dan Brown. The second one is keywords around James Rollins. What you might like to do in your copy is to say, you can't, Amazon's quite strict on what you can and can't say. So exactly. You can't say,
do you like Dan Brown?
you can say that.
Oh, okay.
But you can't compare in a fashion which suggests that your book is superior.
Okay.
So you couldn't say more suspenseful than Dan Brown. That would be rejected, but you could say for fans of Dan Brown, or, if you like Dan Brown, then you might like, just, I think a little bit of superlatives can be quite useful, but you've got to dial it back a little bit. Amazon's quite twitchy about the kind of content that you can use. But you can use, I should say this with, there are some, I'm saying this, I am not a lawyer, but I am a lawyer. Yeah. I'm not a practicing lawyer. But there are some things that you can't say in certain jurisdictions. So for Americans, for example, there's a thing called the right to privacy that you need to bear that in mind. But generally speaking, that kind of principle is not a bad idea just to look at and test.
Okay, so just some of my other questions that I've written down here. What have I answered? Okay, so someone else said to me, like, and is this true, basically, if you find a keyword that works on sponsored products, use that to create a product display ad. So say Dan Brown Da Vinci Code book as a keyword phrase works, should I then just create a product display ad specifically for that one book, for example?
It's not easy to do that because what you're targeting in a product display ads is ASINs effectively. So it's not keywords, it's the actual products themselves. So you might go in and type in Dan Brown. Amazon will give you all the Dan Brown books that it can find, and then you click those ones as that's your targeting. So you're not targeting people as they type in that key phrase. It's actually people who are looking for you'll be on the specific pages. So that's, I don't think that would work.
Okay, cool. And what about targeting yourself as a keyword phrase?
Yeah, it's worth testing. The thing I would say about that is it might be superfluous, because if someone is looking for me, so they type in Mark Dawson on Amazon, Amazon will present them with 25 books that they can purchase. Adding a 26th effectively book in there, being the one that I'm advertising, although I wouldn't be charged it unless they clicked on it, I don't know what purpose that serves, because they're already looking. So why would I give them another, unless I really want them to buy the box set rather than the individual book? And I probably don't, because I make more money if they buy all the individual books rather than buying the box set. So no, I don't think that makes much sense.
Well, and it's a good point, because someone told me that, and of course I just thought, oh, I'll ask Mark, and I didn't think about it properly. Now you've explained it, I understand. But I think that question comes from somebody who's using BookBub ads.
Oh yeah, that's different.
Where you should target yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and what about, and yeah, so that's the thing. Each of these platforms has slightly different rules, doesn't it? And you have to really put yourself in the mind of the user. Yeah. So when I was in Australia, I was like, so who reads on ebook? You know, and there were still two people in the room who were not reading digitally at all and had never even looked at a ebook sales platform. And I was like, sorry guys, you have to do this. If you're not a customer of the way you're trying to sell, this is not going to work. I mean, would that be right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You've got to be able to put yourself in the shoes of your potential reader. It's absolutely essential.
Mm. Okay, what else did I have? Oh, yes, coming back to it's very hard to spend money on Amazon ads. So, I mean, I have a couple of ads that are like really amazing. And yet I can, well, amazing as in they seem to be converting really well, and like a 6% or whatever it is. And I'm like, yay. And then I see that I've only spent like $19 in the last 2 weeks. Yep. So I haven't got, it's not amazing. It's like, oh, good, I made a couple of extra sales. But how do we spend more money if we have the budget?
That is the main frustration with ads, Amazon's ads right now. And I've spoken to someone quite senior at Amazon in Seattle. He works on AMS because I basically want to understand how to make these work more effectively, and then I can tell everyone else how to do it as well. So this is what I come up with. So they haven't come back to me yet. This is the way I've done it. If you've got, let's try to express this properly. So if you've got 10 ads and you want to spend $100, right? You could have 10 ads and try and get each of them to spend $10 each.
Per whatever
your period is. Or you could have 100 ads and get them to spend $1 each. So you scale it just by brute force. So instead of having the 10 ads, and maybe say each of those ads is spending $1 a day, you'll only spend $10 a day. But if you want to get to 100, just add another 90 ads, and then you can get up, and the sales will accrue, if provided they all, let's assume they all perform reasonably well, and that's not realistic. Let's say that this, for the sake of this example, they all perform well. That will get you the sales you want, and it will get you the budget that you want to spend. So I'm probably spending about $60 a day at the moment on Amazon ads. I'd happily spend $600, but it is quite difficult to push it up to that kind of level.
Mm. Do you think they're doing that on purpose, as in they feel like this might be a way to game the system in some form? Or, I mean, it's not really, because like people are only going to buy if they're really interested. But is there that feeling?
I think it's a capacity issue, potentially. I think it is still, it's a beta. They're still kind of in an open beta, which is what Amazon tends to do. But KDP Books at the moment is in an open beta. I think this is probably in that kind of stage where they are still iterating it. I think relevance is quite important. I haven't actually had this confirmed yet, but I'm pretty sure that they will serve ads that, in the same way that Facebook rewards relevant ads with cheaper SERPs, I think Amazon is probably doing the same thing, because they don't really want people searching for Dan Brown to find a book by Nora Roberts, because those are completely incongruent, made a word up there,
incongruent.
Thank you very much. There's no connection between those two authors. So I think probably they want relevance to be seen quite fundamental. I think it could be a combination of all of those kinds of factors. Mm. But it is frustrating, because I want to give them
more money.
Yeah. I've got money, Amazon. I'm happy to spend it on your ads platform.
And also, I mean, they get money every time we sell a book. So, you know, that would be really good.
They win twice, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you have relationships, you know, as I do, with the other vendors. I mean, Kobo now has a much easier way to you know, get promotions and even pay for promotions. Do you think Apple might do something like this? Because it would be really great to do, you know, have a better way of advertising our iBooks.
Yeah, the difference with Apple is highly curated. So that platform, and I've been lucky enough to have Blackout, the last John Milton book, they had it as a brick on the top of their sales page for about a month. Mm. And it drove, Apple was a really, really strong seller for me on that book. And it is because it's very visible when I released it.
Yeah. It's pretty much impossible, well, not impossible, but the sales, you know, it's very clear to see on iBooks when you have a promotion from them, because it literally looks like that.
Yeah. I mean, the ways to, in the absence of them allowing you to buy ads on that platform, the way to get bigger sales on Apple is things like BookBub will translate well to Apple sales. You can send traffic from Facebook. You could, you know, look at all of those kinds of methods. Mailing list too. And if you've got, I've got a big mailing list now, so I know that, because I survey them quite regularly, I've got a good percentage, 10% say, are on Apple. So I know when I release a book, I'll get a big spike on Apple, because that's where my readers have gone. But yeah, I'd love it if Apple opened it up a bit more and allowed us to bid for placement on their homepage. But I can't see that happening in the short term.
No. Okay, so you mentioned Blackout there. And I mean, we're coming to the end of the show here. But with Blackout, you did a combination of ads alongside your email list. Now, obviously, you've been building that list for a long time. But the average author listening, how can they use a combination of advertising with a new book launch?
Yeah, so I've kind of refined this now, so it works quite well. So the main focus has to be your mailing list. So you, let's just say you've got 1,000 people on your mailing list. You send out that email out, and there are ways that you can milk that a bit more by sending out a second email with a different headline. And then recently, what I've done is to take unopeners who didn't open either of those emails, put them into a different email provider. Mm. So I go from MailChimp to MailerLite, for example, and then send them again just a plain text. And that tends to add another 10% of opens. So my open rate is probably about 60% now, which is really excellent.
Very good. Yeah.
But then in combination with that, I would use a lot of Facebook ads. So I'd take that mailing list and I'd import that as what Facebook calls a custom audience. So Facebook will say, so I've got, say I had 70,000 on my mailing list. It will take those 70,000 and work out which of them also has a Facebook account. So probably 45,000 of them would do. You then serve ads to those people. Now, people will say, why are you doing that? They're getting the message twice. But they might not be getting the message twice because they might be the 40% who don't open those emails.
Yeah.
And even if they did get it twice, maybe the first time they saw it, they weren't ready to buy. They're busy. Yeah. So you give them another opportunity to buy. Mm. So that works really well. Then you can do interest targeting and lookalikes to supplement that. For this last launch, I also did BookBub ads. So I did quite a lot of BookBub ads. I definitely targeted myself because, you know, that's another way to get people who might not have seen the Facebook ad, might not have opened the email, to get them through BookBub. And I also started to do Amazon ads on those as well. And those have been quite profitable too. So I spent quite a bit of money, but made much more than that back and had, you know, really excellent coverage. So telling people that book was available.
Mm. Okay, no, I think that's awesome. And so, you know, it's important to remember that you can use it on launch, but you can also use it for backlist. So when I, you know, hit the USA Today list last August, that was using a combination of ads, using the ad stacking method, as you're talking about, in order to, you know, take it up the charts. And those were books I published to 2011 to 2013. So I think the message to everyone is, whether your book is old or new, these things still work, right? Because a book is new whenever someone finds it.
That's exactly right. It's new to the reader. They haven't seen that before. It's a new book, effectively. So no book is dead. You can always bring books back to life with advertising.
Okay, so we are excitingly going to do a webinar on this stuff, which I'm excited about because, as I said, I've got a ton of notes from this and I fully expect to get more notes from our webinar. So it will be on Tuesday, the 28th of March at 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK. So what can people expect in that webinar? What are we going to show them?
I think we'll focus on Amazon ads because that is where most people's interest is at right now. So we will look at tips for running successful sponsored product ads and product display ads. I'll probably do this worked quite well the last time we did our Facebook ads webinar, but this we'll do a live. I'll create an ad live as we do it, and this will be quick. I mean, Facebook I can do it in 5 minutes. I think in Amazon I could probably do it in 30 seconds. But we'll spend a lot of time going through what I'm doing,
and also maybe some tips on, you know, demonstrating how to find the keywords, because that's such an important part of
yes,
it.
Yes, that's a really good idea. Yeah, we'll look into that. We'll look at the Google Ads AdWords Planner. We'll look at list scraping from Listopia and all that kind of good stuff, so people can. What we've always tried to do is to make sure that there's plenty of workable, actionable stuff. I'm not interested in doing webinars where you give four pieces of information, but you need the fifth and you hold that back. I want people to be able to start running ads immediately. So we'll make it as valuable as we can.
Yeah. And that's so important to me for everyone listening, that you can just watch this free webinar and you will be able to set up an Amazon ad. You don't have to buy the course or anything. You can just take that step if you want to. But this webinar will contain how you can set up Amazon ads. And I will hold Mark to that. So don't you worry. So you can sign up for that webinar at thecreativepen.com/Mark17. That's MARK17 numerals. So MARK17. And that is pretty exciting. Now, just one final question, because you now have a podcast, Self-Publishing Formula, and you also have a YouTube channel. And it's just not fair, Mark, because you have these professional ex-BBC like guys who are doing all that. And you're like suddenly so professional. But it's awesome. Tell people about the podcast and the YouTube channel and everything you guys are doing over there.
Yeah, so it's everything is at selfpublishingformula.com. And depending on when people listen to this, we're having a big rebrand right now. We've got some exciting stuff coming down the track with regards to probably a membership site we're going to be doing, with which will be very inexpensive, but loads of good value. The podcast goes out every Friday, and we do it on, also it's on as a podcast. It's a video podcast on YouTube. And what we've been having loads of fun with is broadcasting it live on Facebook through Facebook Live. And so James is my co-host, me, and we'll probably start getting guests on as well to actually answer questions in the comments as we replay the podcast. So we're having loads of fun with that. It's been, and I'm very lucky. I'm always very impressed with, you know, people like you doing this with a smaller team, or sometimes even just you, whereas I basically just turn up on Friday, whittle on for half an hour, and then James and John take care of all the stuff I can't be bothered to do. So I know I'm lucky.
they are pros. No, well, maybe we can do something at London Book Fair on Facebook Live, because I basically don't do much Facebook Live because it just scares me. But you guys are such pros. I'll just stand next to you and bask in your reflected glory.
That sounds like a plan.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your time, Mark. That was great.
See you later.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Mark. It was certainly packed with tidbits and tips that you can put into practice with your Amazon ads. And Mark did forget a couple of the names of some tools. So for keyword research, look at the Google AdWords Planner, Merchant Words and KeywordTool.io. And the auto scraping tool name for Goodreads is import.io, import.io. And of course, those will be in the show notes, thecreativepen.com/podcast. And you can go to this episode 313. And remember, you can also join Mark and I on the free webinar Tuesday, 28th of March at 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK. And yes, you can get the replay if you sign up at thecreativepen.com/Mark17, M-A-R-K-17. And that will be on how to create your own Amazon ads. And it will be super fun and info-packed. And you'll also get a Q&A with Mark and I. So come along to that. Next week, I have an interview with Gerard Morris on how to podcast, with lots of tips and tricks on interview techniques, setup and more. And also tips if you are going to be interviewed on a podcast, even if you don't want to set up your own show. Gerard is part of the Rainmaker FM team and has several podcasts himself, including The Showrunner, a podcast about podcasting. So those of you who are interested in starting a show will find it useful. And as ever, you'll get the introduction from America. So definitely tune in to listen to that. I certainly credit this podcast with changing my life. So even if you think it's too late, it's not. And there are definitely not enough diverse voices out there in the podcastosphere. I don't know if that's a real word, but so have a listen, even if you are possibly considering doing your own show. I love my podcast and I love you guys. And fantastic. So I will be back next week from New Orleans. Happy creative week ahead. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.